Please be seated, everyone, and we'll call our next case, which is case number 61932, Fruden v. Pilling. We have Ms. Fruden representing the appellants, Mr. Drake representing the respondents. So, Ms. Fruden, you may proceed with your opening argument. And did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal? Very well. Okay, thank you very much. We'll note that.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mary Fruden on behalf of appellants. Myself and my husband, John Fruden, as parents and guardians of our minor children who are students in the Washoe County School District. The authority to establish a policy for the Washoe County School District and the due process by which it can be done is clearly and unambiguously set forth under Nevada law. In this case, NRS 392-415 is the enabling statute which permits the Washoe County School District Board of Trustees to make a policy on mandatory school uniforms, while NRS 386-330 and NRS 241-0355 require the Board of Trustees to do so at a regular public meeting where a majority of the trustees approve of the action. The policymaking authority necessarily includes the right to provide notice and a full opportunity to be involved as set forth under the open meeting law. And in this particular case, because it involves or concerns student discipline, it required the right to 15 days notice and a full opportunity to be heard as provided by NRS 386-365. In disregard of the clear language of the Board of Trustees enabling statute and due process, the Roy Gaum Elementary School Parent Faculty Association, the PFA, established a policy for mandatory school uniforms at Roy Gaum and prescribed the disciplinary action for violation of the policy. They did so with the support of Kay Ann Pilling, the principal of Roy Gaum Elementary School and an executive member of the Roy Gaum PFA, and with the apparent authority of the Washoe County School District. Disciplinary action was then taken against our children in accordance with the policy by Principal Pilling when they failed to comply. They missed valuable in-class instruction. They suffered in-school detention, and they were threatened with out-of-school suspension if they didn't comply a third time. The policy should have been declared void by the district court, and we should have been permitted to seek our damages for violation of our statutory rights as parents and students, and for the negligence and breach of fiduciary duties. If the district court's ruling is affirmed, we will have been denied all our remedies for their wrongful actions.
As to what you are asserting, even if we found what you're asserting true, does the principal have a right to create the uniform policy outside of the other body?
Your Honor, I believe that right is delegated exclusively to the Board of Trustees under the statute. When they used the term Board of Trustees may establish a policy under the statutory canon, when they state one thing, they mean the exclusion of another. And it's a policy that's involved. It's not just rulemaking. So, no, I don't believe the principal could do it on her own and establish a policy unless there was already a policy established by the school district board of trustees, who's the one that has to make the policy decisions, the board.
You seem to be reading that may as a shall, as if it's mandatory opposed to discretionary. Does that make a difference?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it makes a difference. I believe that the Board of Trustees, it's a discretionary for the Board of Trustees to do it, but it's not discretionary for the principal to do it. If the Board of Trustees decides under its policymaking authority that a mandatory uniform policy can be established or should be established, which that kind of collaborative decision-making by a public body that's elected by the public and it's open to public scrutiny and they're held accountable as public officials makes all the difference. The way the statute's written, it's not permitted for it to be subdelegated to the principal or anyone else, and especially not to an educational foundation.
So the principal has no independent authority under any of our statutes, if we follow your argument to its logical conclusion, to impose any type of uniform policy or other rule-making initiative?
I believe that the principal does have authority under various statutes where the legislature has deemed it appropriate that the principal is the one that makes those regulations or rules. The legislature has said the principal shall do this or the principal may do this. There's also the whole section of statutes under the Education Code for Empowerment Schools, which says that the principal can get a waiver from the State Board of Education for compliance with the statutes and laws. But overall, it says that the statutes and regulations cannot be waived. So if the legislature intended for the principal to do it, the legislature would have said that under NRS 392415.
So absent specific statutory authority, the principal has only limited authority to implement rules and regulations in their school.
The statutes say that the principal has the discretion to implement rules, disciplinary action, and rules that are consistent with the State Board of Education, the public policy regarding parental involvement, and all the other rules and regulations that the Board of Trustees has adopted pursuant to its authority first, that her or his, the principal's regulations, rules, have to be consistent with those. I believe the district court erred in finding no implied right of action in Nevada's education laws. The language of the statutes at issue, the Nevada Constitution, the statutory scheme and public policy show an intent to provide parents and students with a private right of action.
Where can you expand on that a little bit? Where? And where does it show that the students and the parents are protected class?
Well, I believe because the education statutes are set forth for the education of our children, they are a protected class, that our Constitution provides for a uniform system of education, and that uniform system of education, the statute that says we're entitled to equal rights and privileges, or the statute actually says that the schools within each district have to be maintained with equal rights and privileges. If you say that doesn't give us any rights, even though there's clear statutory language for it under 388.070, I believe that the public policy, the State Board of Education's policy, and the statutes that have been enacted to afford parental involvement specifically say we have the right, or they don't say right, they actually say we're empowered to advocate for our children and to stand up for their rights.
How does this argument mesh with Court versus Ash and those factors that we use in determining whether or not an implied private right of action exists?
Well, I think that Court versus Ash doesn't necessarily say that you have to look to those four elements, that it's the intent of the legislature that prevails, and where you have language specific in the statutes that talks about rights and privileges, that talks about equal rights and privileges, that talks about parental empowerment and the right to be involved in policy making and decision making in our schools, that when you have a board policy that says parents and students are the ones who are responsible for student dress unless it provides some kind of disruption, causes disruption, or there's a potential for a safety issue, those rights have been given to us, have been provided for us, either by the Constitution, by our statutes, or by the board's policies themselves. And those policies include Washoe County School District Board of Trustees Policy 5039, which was formerly BOT P039 and referenced in our complaint that way, our First Amendment complaint. It requires the sound program of student discipline be applied consistently throughout the district. So that would also answer part of your question earlier, that if the principal's policy isn't consistent with the plans that have been adopted, then no, she or he couldn't do it. That we also, under a statute that's recently been adopted by codified, we have 125.036, which provide that parental rights are fundamental in the care, custody, and management of their children.
Did you want to reserve the balance of your time now?
I do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We got 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Mr. Drake? Mm-hmm.
Good morning. Randy Drake. I'm Chief General Counsel for the Washoe County School District. I'm representing the respondents in this matter today. To begin with, as a sort of starting out with a summation, there's hundreds of pages of pleadings and exhibits in this record that reflect the appellant's wish to have statutes, legislative history, and case law interpreted differently than they have been in the past. At best, the readings that the appellant wishes to have this authority read is strained. At worst, it's opposite. And I'll start out with the first subject that the appellant raised in oral argument. It's the uniform policy statute in the state of Nevada, NRS 392.415. As pointed out by the justice, it's a permissive statute. And the appellant's argument ignores the relevant legislative history that is part of the statute, as recognized by the lower, the federal district court in the opinion 842 Fed Sub 2nd 1265 that was created as a result of the federal cause of action brought by the Frudens against the school district. The court found that the statute does not divest individual schools from adopting and implementing a uniform policy. The court stated that there's no intent in the legislative history, there's no intent found to strip schools of the ability they already have to adopt uniforms in the absence of action by the school district. Furthermore, the court found that the legislature had no objection to the longstanding practice of schools adopting their own uniforms. That's what the legislative history provides. That's what the federal district court found in the federal action brought by the Frudens. And as a practical matter, the Washoe County School District has approximately 100 schools in our district. Approximately 30 of those schools have uniform policies, mandatory uniform policies. So where are the lawsuits related to those 30 schools? If it's found inappropriate or not allowed in this case, then how does that affect the other schools? As a matter of fact, the Frudens' oldest child is now a student at Swope Middle School that has mandatory uniform policy. Is that the next lawsuit to follow? It's allowed under the statute, it's permissive, and the individual schools have acted appropriately.
But the statute does, just reading the statute, not the legislative history. By its terms, it grants permission to the school board or the board of trustees,
yes,
to adopt a uniform policy, provided it does certain things. That policy has to meet certain criteria. Logically, if everybody already had the power to impose uniform requirements, why have that statute at all with the additional requirements that it imposes of consultation with parents and so on and so forth? That's my trouble, is reading that statute just within the confines of the statute, not looking at the legislative history. Sure, it's permissive. The Board of Trustees does not have to adopt a uniform policy. But it's arguable that if there is going to be a uniform policy adopted, it has to be adopted by the Board of Trustees and meet all of these criteria, I think. I mean, I think they have a point there. Could you comment on the just the plain reading of the statute as opposed to legislative history?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, it is permissive. And second, the language is permissive, and then it has certain requirements if the Board of Trustees does choose to adopt a uniform policy. And those requirements, consultation with parents, and specific details that must be in that uniform policy if the Board of Trustees chooses to adopt, those requirements were, in this case, but at Roy Gaum Elementary School, those requirements, even though arguably they didn't have to follow, they did follow. They brought in the Parent Faculty Association. They brought in parents. They had meetings. They got input. They had a vote. The specifics in the policy about what can be worn, what can't be worn. All of those details in that statute, even though arguably the individual schools don't have to follow them, they were followed in this case. So that's how I'd respond to that point, Your Honor.
But, Counsel, you're suggesting that there's some implied authority for the principal to undertake a uniform policy.
No, Your Honor.
What's the source of that? Or is there some express authority enumerated somewhere else?
Your Honor, as a general matter, public education in this country is delegated to state and local authorities. The federal district court recognized that pertaining to this issue at the federal level and pertaining to the federal lawsuit. Right. The principal, the administration at individual schools have implied authority to impose discipline, to implement curriculum, to evaluate teachers, to evaluate staff, to run the school at a local level.
So your argument would be that the principal's authority to implement discipline within the school encompasses the principal's authority to establish a uniform policy. Would it be necessary for the policy to have a nexus between discipline and promoting discipline and the policy that's ultimately adopted?
I think there's a nexus recognized, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. The authority throughout the country and the readings and court precedent evaluating school uniform policies has always recognized the nexus between school uniforms, between the school's desire and need to foster a community within the school, to foster discipline within the school, to decrease gang affiliations in the school, and to increase student achievement. That nexus between those four factors and school uniforms has always been recognized within court precedent in this country.
Did the PFA indicate, and did the principal ultimately find that that was the reason for adopting the policy at Roy Gaum?
That information was part of the information communicated to the parents and to the Roy Gaum community when they were discussing implementation and adoption and implementation of the uniform policy. Yes, Your Honor.
I think that it's important to evaluate the claim that the PFA is subject to the open meeting law.
Sure, Your Honor. I'll be happy to do that. There's three uncontroverted facts in this case related to the open meeting law, Nevada's open meeting law, NRS 241.0153A. The Roy Gaum PFA was not created by a public body, the Board of Trustees in this case. The PFA does not report to the public body, the Board of Trustees, and the PFA is privately funded and expends no taxpayer monies. Now, the appellants cannot get around those facts. And there is no relationship to the Board of Trustees between the PFA and the Board of Trustees. They're completely independent. It is an inclusionary statute that happens to include, quote-unquote, an educational foundation. I don't even know if the Roy Gaum PFA is an educational foundation. Appellant is arguing that it is an educational foundation. So be it. If it is an educational foundation, it's included within the plain meaning of the statute. There's no creation here by a public body. Let me go a little further. as general counsel of the school district, I advise committees, subcommittees, formally created or informally created, if they are going to report to the Board of Trustees or provide information to the Board of Trustees that the Board of Trustees might act upon, my advice is they must follow the open meeting law. Now, that's, again, formally or informally created. There's, from the 2011 legislature and the changes to the open meeting law from the 2011 legislature, it can be argued that they're narrowing that and they're putting more of, that the legislature is putting more of a focus on the creation portion of that instead of the function. Now, again, my advice to general counsel is to look at the function and are they going to be reporting to the Board of Trustees? Are they going to provide information to the Board of Trustees? That, to be conservative, that's the advice I give. But the legislature and the statute is putting more importance on creation of the body. And here we have no creation whatsoever by the Board of Trustees of the PFA. We have, there's approximately 600 schools in the state of Nevada. All of them, I believe, have multiple, single or multiple parent-related or community-based organizations, whether it's PTAs, parent-teacher associations, PFAs, parent-faculty associations, booster clubs, all sorts of clubs related to these schools. The appellants argued in their briefs that not finding an education foundation subjecting an education foundation to this law would be an absurd result. Well, Your Honors, I would submit that the other way would be an absurd result. Subjecting these hundreds, if not thousands, of parent-faculty organizations, community-based organizations that are privately funded, privately created as part of the school, subjecting those organizations to the open meeting law would be an absurd result. And I don't believe that, and I believe the legislature is not going in that direction.
Doesn't this fall outside of the 2013 amendment?
That was the 2011 amendment, Your Honor.
Okay.
And this case was originated after the 2011 amendments.
Mr. Drake, the district court concluded that the PFA was not a public body under the statute.
Correct.
Was there anything in the record that indicated how the PFA was organized, how it was formed, whether it had tax-exempt status under 501c3? Is there anything in the record that supports the argument that 388.753 could be used to conclude it's an educational foundation?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe there's affidavits as part of the respondent's motion for summary judgment filed in the lower court that from the president of the Board of Trustees at the time and from the president of the PFA at the time that testifies that, and again, uncontroverted, that the PFA was privately created, 501c3, private funds, no taxpayer funds are expended. That's in the lower court record, Your Honor.
Okay.
Private right of action, I'll address that briefly as the appellants brought it up in their argument. As the justice pointed out, the court factors are not met here. As this court found in Baldonado, absence, and this was recognized in 842 Fed Sub 2nd 1265 by the Federal District Court, absence of express provision providing private right of action strongly suggests one does not exist. Furthermore, analysis is not whether the appellants would benefit, but rather whether the legislature intended to confer a right. Here, in any of the cited statutes by the appellants, that legislative history does not exist. It doesn't exist in the face of the statutes, in the reading of the statutes, and it doesn't exist in the legislative history as is required.
Mr. Drake, you indicated that there are 30 schools in the Washoe County School District that have uniform policies.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything in the record that confirms that, and if so, is there anything in the record that describes the differences among those policies? Is the difference in shirt color and pants or dress, or is it in some other form?
I believe there's something in the record, Your Honor, at the lower court level identifying the number of schools, individual schools within the Washoe County School District that have uniform policies. However, I do not believe there are there it gets so specific to identify any differences that may exist in those policies.
Well, that raises an interesting question. Suppose that in one elementary school the policy requires one to wear a green shirt and plaid pants, and another elementary school requires the students to wear another form of dress, perhaps a form of dress that is politically offensive. How does one redress that if it's simply principle-driven?
Two ways, Your Honor. The school district does have a global board policy discussing dress code, what is allowed, general, absent specifics in a uniform policy. There is a global board policy discussing dress code, what is allowed, what isn't allowed. So that would cover some of that, Your Honor.
Is that policy in the record? Is it cited in the record?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Do you recall the name or number of it? I know there's a lot of numbers flying around here.
A lot of policies, Your Honor. I don't remember the specific policy right now. But
your argument would be that that countywide adopted policy somehow creates some authority then for the principal to act?
Yes, Your Honor, but it also doesn't divest the school, the individual school, of adopting and implementing a school uniform policy, especially in light of the legislature not prohibiting the individual schools from doing so, legislative history and the reading of the statute allowing that to happen.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Drake.
Counsel, as you approach, would you please advise what the status is of your appeal in the Ninth Circuit?
Yes, the Ninth Circuit heard the arguments on October 7th, I believe it was.
Do you have a decision?
No, we don't.
Thank you.
It is available online, though, if you want to watch the video.
And I know that.
Okay, let me address a couple of things that Mr. Drake said. There is no board policy for dress codes. There's a Washoe County student parent-student handbook that sets forth a dress code policy for high school and middle school students only. It's a dress code. It's not a mandatory uniform policy, and it sets forth a disciplinary action. But that was never approved by the board under the statutes that say how the board has to approve disciplinary action, with 15 days' notice to the public, with an opportunity to be heard, and all of that kind of thing. We don't have to address or get around the facts that were provided by affidavit for the open meeting law to apply, because NRS 388750 says an educational foundation shall comply with the provisions of NRS 241. An educational foundation is defined as a nonprofit corporation, which the PFA is, organized and operated exclusively for the purposes of supporting one or more kindergartens, elementary schools, junior high or middle schools, high schools, or any combination thereof. We have evidence of that in the record that's found on Appellant's Appendix Volume 1, page 40, formed pursuant to the laws of the state. That's also in the record. It's in Appellant's Volume 1, page 35, and exempt from taxation pursuant to 26 U.S.C. 501c3. That's in the record at Appellant's Volume 1, page 69, 70, and 83. Because the PFA is an educational foundation, and because the open meeting law applies to an educational foundation, says the educational foundation is a public body, regardless of whether they get any tax exempt, receive any monies from taxes, it applies to them regardless. That was the clear intent of the legislature when they adopted that portion of the definition of public policy, public body. I'm sorry. Mr. Drake argues that we're concerned with all of these other schools out in the Washoe County School District that already have established mandatory uniform policies. Just because that's there doesn't make it right. The policy, the authority to establish the policy is set forth under 392.415. That's the authority the legislature delegated to the Board of Trustees. In this case, the Washoe County School District Board of Trustees. There's a reason they gave the Board of Trustees the authority to do that, because it involves the kind of policy decision making efforts that the PFA said they went through. But really, if you look at the record, they didn't go through any of these. Roy Gum doesn't have gangs. Roy Gum doesn't have vast socioeconomic disparity. Roy Gum doesn't have violence. In fact, we had zero cases of violence the year before the policy was adopted, and after it was adopted, we had one case of violence that resulted in suspension or expulsion. That's available as a matter of public
record. Ms. Friedman, I'm sorry for interrupting your comment, but the point that Mr. Drake was making that I understood, and I wanted to ask you to comment on it, is the principal has the authority under the general authority to do discipline in a school to set uniform policy. Could a principal bar students from wearing hoodies, for example, or similar clothing associated with gang behavior?
I believe that a dress code that might bar hoodies, if there was a compelling governmental interest, if you're going to say, or even a substantial governmental interest, say for safety or some other reason, and we haven't really established what those compelling or substantial governmental interests are, if the principal is allowed to adopt a dress code, which I believe she probably or he probably is, that's consistent with the dress code that's been adopted by the Board of Trustees, which they haven't actually done yet, with the disciplinary action involved, then yes, the principal could do that. She could bar hoodies.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the court for Ms. Friedman? Okay, Ms. Friedman, thank you so much for your argument, Mr. Drake as well, and the case will stand submitted, and we'll be in recess till 1:30 this afternoon.